Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of March.
Good morning, Kathleen.
We have a very busy program the first hour. We always check on the primaries for the previous day, and today we're looking at Alabama and Mississippi, where Mitt Romney did not do very well. We'll have two guests with us from Mississippi Public Broadcasting and from Alabama Public Radio. Later this hour, Lachlan McDonald will join us. There have been a couple major voting IDs. Decisions made in courts in Wisconsin in the last week and a half. We will look at those, and also the ACLU has a challenge to the voter ID in federal court. He's a keynote speaker at the ACLU banquet this coming Saturday, and he will be with us. He's done voting issues since 1972 for a long, long time, representing racial and language minorities in many discrimination cases and specializing in the area of voting rights. He will join us the last part of this hour. Hour number two, something entirely different. We're celebrating St. Patrick's Day a little bit early, although I do tend to celebrate this week in a subdued fashion, of course, with music and literature. Frank Delaney was with us last year at this time. He is here again today. He has been talked about as the most eloquent man in the world. I believe Scott Simon called him that, and indeed he is. He's a fascinating man. He's written all kinds of books about Ireland. He's from County Tipperary, and you will love the conversation with him. And we'll have a little poetry and a little music during the hour as well. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk at WPR.org. What do you think about what happened in the Deep South yesterday, where Rick Santorum won both those races? Joining us from Alabama Public Radio is Stan Ingold. Hello, Stan.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So, Rick Santorum won both. The exit polls seemed to be way off in the station that I was watching, and it seemed as though Mitt Romney was going to win this. Indeed, he didn't. Was it common wisdom that he probably was, or did you think all along that Santorum was going to win?
After looking at some of the polls and also the GOP forum they had in Birmingham on Monday night, it seemed like it was going to be more of a race between Santorum and Newt Gingrich. And Romney, I mean, he campaigned in the state, but not nearly as hard as the other two guys did. And so going into last night's poll, I expected him to finish second, maybe third, but I expected it to be one of the other two to come out on top.
And tell me more about that forum. What happened?
What it was basically just a last-minute attempt for these guys to get up and speak their mind to the Alabama voters and try and sway anybody that might be undecided. All four of the candidates were invited to it, but only Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum showed up for it. And it was at the Alabama Theater in Birmingham, which is a really awesome, historic old building. And there was a capacity crowd there, probably in somewhere in the neighborhood, a little over 2,000 people. And both these guys were treated like rock stars there. I mean, there was so much red, white, and blue from their campaign signs. It looked like the 4th of July in this building. But there were several times when the crowds would start chanting, "Yo, Rick, Rick, Rick," or then they'd counter with "Newt, Newt, Newt." And a few supporters from the other candidates were there, but they weren't heard nearly as much as the other two were.
Why didn't they show up?
I'm not sure exactly. I know Romney had campaigned earlier in the day down in Mobile, but the other two, Ron Paul actually had very little presence in Alabama from what I noticed. I didn't hear many campaign ads from him. I didn't see much of his stuff. There were a group of his supporters at the event, and some of the staffers were not particularly thrilled by that when they showed up. But I guess they expected them to maybe cause a little bit of a ruckus, but they were very well behaved. A few shouts of "Vote Ron Paul," but that was about it. But he wasn't there. And Romney, I'm not particularly sure why. I never heard a statement as to why he didn't come to the forum in Birmingham.
What is the reason, and maybe you, after covering this for so long, can be inside Newt Gingrich's mind, but what is the reason for him to stay in the race right now? Is it just because he wants to?
Well, I was watching his reaction to the votes last night. I think he's just determined to stick in it as long as he can. And I'm not sure if he believes he can still win the whole thing, but he wants to remain a candidate and get his ideas out there for as long as he can. I think that's his main reason for sticking this race out.
He did make a point, and perhaps it's a valid point, that he has directed the national conversation to the price of gas.
Oh, he was hitting on that very, very hard. Most of what he spoke about Monday night was basically his appeal to Southerners, of course, he mentioned that, but talking about gas prices and energy. He made the he compared the president's plan. He made the announcement of that you want to have President Algae versus President Drilling, talking about President Obama's plan to at some point somehow be able to harvest algae into a type of fuel versus Gingrich's plan to open up the pipelines and drill or extract oil from the U.S., kind of making that comparison. He hit on that really hard and was received really well by the crowd on comments like that.
Mm-hmm. Why is it that Santorum played better in the Deep South than Gingrich when Gingrich had a Southern strategy?
He had a Southern strategy, but I think Santorum appeals more to the Bible Belt aspect. And I know Gingrich has some baggage, but a lot of the people that I talked to outside of the event on Monday was that they were impressed with Santorum being extremely vocal about his faith and seemed to really line up with a lot of the Bible Belt ideals. And I think that may have been why he was a bit more popular down here.
What are those ideals?
And he's just very vocal about his Christian faith, and I think the voters down here just really like that, the fact that he's so open about what he believes and his religion and his faith in Christianity, whereas the other candidates don't really touch on that. And that really appeals with a lot of people down here.
And do you think it appeals to a lot of people in other areas as well? Because he seems to be the conservative candidate who's caught fire.
They keep referring to him as one of the true conservatives in this. And while people like Romney is, he does well with the more moderate voters, Santorum is doing better with some of the more conservative crowds. And I think it could have something to do with that. He does better with a lot of the, I've got some of the exit poll information here, and he's doing better with some of the more middle-income people than Romney is and than with what Gingrich is. And I think that may have something to do with it. I mean, it's a group that he appeals to, and they're very vocal about their ideals of faith. And I think that has a lot to do with it.
We've heard so much about women and the Republican Party and women in the Democratic Party and women in issues and women being slighted. Did you see a breakdown today of how women voted in Alabama?
In Alabama, it looks like Santorum actually came out with around, looks like 38% of the female vote in Alabama, followed up next by Romney with 30%, and then Gingrich had around 25%, and then Paul had about 5% down at the bottom.
And what do you think would happen, Stan? I'm thinking about Newt Gingrich, and I thought this when I looked at other primaries, where if Gingrich was out of the race, Santorum would have won some of these other primaries, it seems to me, fairly substantially. If Newt Gingrich, and I'm sure a lot of people are asking him to do this today and tomorrow, please leave the race so we can unify around Santorum, what would it do you think, to the race for Gingrich to be gone?
I believe that, from what I've heard anyway, that if Gingrich were to leave, a lot of his support would go over to Santorum. I'm sure Romney would pick up some of those, but it sounds like a lot of those would switch over to Santorum because he's a little closer to the same mindset as the voters for Gingrich are than the ones that are for Romney.
Mm-hmm. You talk about the Bible Belt and the faith of the Bible Belt and the faith of Rick Santorum. Does the faith of Mitt Romney hurt him in the Deep South? Are there polls that looked at that, or have you done interviews about that?
It seems like that's a really big issue. It's something that keeps getting brought up over and over again. If you listen to the people on the national level, they keep talking about, can Mitt Romney do well in the South with his religion, the way he believes? And I think that plays a major factor down here because the Mormon faith is something that's not really, from what I understand, it's not really understood down here as much as it is in, say, the western states like Utah, Nevada, and California, places like that. And people down here, people in the Deep South, the whole Bible Belt region, are really, they're defensive about things when it comes to religion. So I think that may be a really big factor of why he wasn't polling so well down here. I don't think it's the only factor, though. I think that the fact that he was the governor of Massachusetts, he's lived in Michigan, Massachusetts, he's a guy from up north, and I don't think that translates too well along with his wealth. I think that combined with his religion, I think makes a big difference in the way he is received down in the Deep South.
Mm-hmm. I always like to ask, because we didn't see the ads that ran in Alabama, was it a highly negative campaign, Stan, or not?
I honestly, I didn't hear too many political ads over the radio or through the TV. And when
really?
I did, it was mostly those fact-checking ones that came up. It's like, this for example, they would come up and say, well, Rick Santorum says he did this, but in reality, it something came out more like this. And, or Newt Gingrich said this, but this is what really happened. It was mostly those little fact-checking things. They weren't full-blown, like, negative attacks. There was more these things that popped up and said, look at these and decide for yourself what you think about it.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about how Alabama traditionally votes. Is this solid Republican territory?
For the most part, yes. When it comes to the national scale, whenever I believe the last time the state ever went blue in a general election was under Carter, I believe. So, I mean, it's a pretty strong Republican stronghold when it comes to the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm. How much of the campaign centered on an anti-Obama kind of theme? How much of the campaign centered on, if you were Newt Gingrich, an anti-Santorum, if you were Romney, an anti-Santorum, if you were Santorum, an anti-Romney? Was it a national kind of focus or within the Republican primary?
Oh, it was very much a national focus. If you were at that forum in Birmingham on Monday night, you would have thought one of these guys was already the Republican nominee, because they spent, I'd say, 90% of their attacks were against President Obama as opposed to their opponents in the primary. The only time they were really made any comments or jabs at the other Republicans were when they were asked why they were the most electable. But most of the time, it was very hard attacks against President Obama.
Mm-hmm. And who campaigned the hardest in the state? Was Gingrich there in full force, Santorum?
Both of them were here quite a bit, back and forth between Alabama and Mississippi. Both made several stops in all throughout the state. Gingrich made a lot through central Alabama and the southern part of the state. Santorum was kind of all over the place, mostly in the north and in the central part. But I believe he made appearances throughout a good even spread of the state. But both of those guys campaigned really, really hard here. Romney campaigned, but he only made a couple stops in Alabama himself. He sent his wife to several locations, though. Ann was in Huntsville, Montgomery, and Birmingham, I think, on Monday alone, and he was down in Mobile. So that's about the extent of it. And I don't believe Ron Paul had much of a – I don't think he campaigned in Alabama at all personally.
She's doing a lot of heavy-duty campaigning these days, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. She is.
She must resonate well with the voters.
I believe so. I mean, it's one of those, I think, where Romney himself, I think he wants to kind of distance himself a little bit from these other candidates. But having his wife here, I think she might be accepted a little bit more so than he will, because he's the guy they see all the time, and she would maybe be able to bring out a different side to him. I'm not really 100% sure on that one, but I mean, she was here for him most of the state. She did most of the appearances for him in the state.
And what about this embracing somebody who is one of your own? If you were looking at all the candidates, Mitt Romney is probably the least southern of all of the candidates, and went out of his way to talk about, you know, and was made fun of for these cheesy grits and y'all trying to get a southern kind of language. Were people offended by that, or did they think it was sweet that he was going out of his way to be southern?
I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, he did everything he possibly could to try and appear southern. I mean, he tried to use y'all. He's talking about eating grits. Appeared down with in Mobile with Jeff Foxworthy, of all people, to help strengthen his appeal with the southern people. And it was very lightly talked about at that forum. Newt Gingrich really hit on the fact that he's from Georgia. He grew up and worked right next to the Alabama border. And he said when he woke up that morning when he had grits, he said it wasn't that different for him. So,
I lived in the South for a while, but I never took to grits, I must tell you.
No, I'm a fan. I like them.
Do you like them? Okay. You're a true Southerner then. And when you talk about, what did you say, 2,000 people showed up at this Birmingham forum?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the place holds around, I think they said it holds 200 or 2,500 people. And it was at capacity. It was full. There were a lot of people at this thing.
Why?
They wanted to get out and hear their candidates. They wanted to. Some of them were undecided. Some of them just wanted to be able to see one of these guys while they were running. And I mean, you saw some people that were completely decked out in buttons, and some I actually saw one guy walking around with a question mark on his shirt. So they just weren't sure who they wanted to vote for. This was their opportunity to hear the candidates and see what they had to say.
I bet that guy got a lot of attention. That's a good way to get attention, wear a question
mark.
Yeah. We welcome phone calls if you'd like to join the conversation. We've been pretty reliable in covering the primaries the day after they have happened. And today we look at the first primaries in the Deep South, although I guess you could say Georgia is the Deep South as well, where Rick Santorum won in both Alabama and Mississippi, in case you're new to the news today. It does call into question a couple things. Does Mitt Romney still appear to be the inevitable here? He just is going to have a hard time with the Deep South, but he can carry it out in other parts of the country. And what about Newt Gingrich? What would happen if Gingrich said, okay, and I'm sure he's being advised to do this today, it's time for you to leave the race and let's give our support to the true conservative in this race, and that happens to be Rick Santorum. We welcome your phone calls. Here's how you can join us, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. A little bit later, we will be speaking with Jeffrey Hess, reporter from Mississippi Public Broadcasting. And later in the hour, the director of the Voting Rights Project for the American Civil Liberties Union will join us to talk about the voter ID judicial rulings, which took place in Wisconsin. And, of course, he's dealing with this on a national level, and there are challenges in other states. And Texas ID program was kicked out this week, too. So we'll look at that with Lachlan McDonald a little bit later this hour. Hour two, we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, Frank Delaney will join us for an early St. Patrick's Day celebration. He's written a number of books, novels of Ireland, addressing decade by decade the 20th century of his homeland. He also has this pretty neat thing going on, Rejoice. It's deconstructing, examining, and illuminating James Joyce's Ulysses line by line in 5-minute broadcasts, which he does once a week on his website, and this project is estimated to run, get this, a quarter of a century. All right, let's go to some phone calls. 800-486-8655. Paul in Crawford County. Hi.
Hello, am I on?
Yes, you are, Paul. Hi.
Hi. Our guest is from Alabama, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering, first of all, would in the general election, if Romney's the nominee, how motivated are people going to be to come out and vote for Romney? Is Buddy Romer, the governor from Louisiana, going to be a factor? Because he's going to run as a third-party guy. And also, I just wanted to find out how the recovery in Tuscaloosa is going after the tornado. That was about a year ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. But answer your question first about whether or not if Romney does end up taking the nomination, from the people I talked to, it seems like they're ready to shore up behind whoever wins the nomination. So, I mean, the people down here, obviously, they voted for Santorum, but for the people I've talked to, it seems like the general opinion is going to be that they will back whoever wins the GOP nomination. And as to for the third-party candidate, I have not heard much about that. But the recovery in Tuscaloosa is actually going very well. There's still work to be done, but it is it's progressing well.
And when you say they will back the candidate, does that also mean they will turn out and vote in large numbers?
Now, that I'm not sure about. Our voter turnout for the primary was around 30%, and our Secretary of State predicted about 29%. So it was about where they expected. Now, for turnout in November, I'm not sure how that's going to turn out.
And how did you spend last night?
I spent last night scouring reports and watching the various outlets to see who was going to come out on top of this, because I was interested personally just to see who was going to win after covering this for so long. And the thing that shocked, I won't say I was shocked, but I was mildly shocked, I guess, by the percentage, by the span that Santorum won. I expected him or Gingrich to win, but the difference in the gap is what surprised me.
Hmm. All right. Thank you very, very much for being with us today, Stan.
Thank you for having me on.
Stan Ingold, reporter for Alabama Public Radio, joining us to talk about the vote where Rick Santorum won yesterday. And we are going to talk about Mississippi, the next part of our program. Jeffrey Hess is joining us. Jeffrey is a reporter for Mississippi Public Broadcasting. He also worked in Ohio. He's an Ohio native and did work in broadcasting in Ohio, Texas, and Florida before he became Capital Reporter for Mississippi Public Broadcasting in 2010. He has a passion and intense interest in providing detailed, smart, informative news to the Mississippi radio audience, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. Paul, thank you for your call. It's just we're switching states now to Mississippi. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Our email address, that's open to you always for our discussions, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Hi, Jeffrey.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Thank you for being with us. I was watching, I think, CNN for a good chunk of the night last night, and they seemed to have their exit polling indicating that this race was going to be Romney's, and then there was this big switch. Our later exit polls are showing something entirely different. What's the story with exit polls? Should people just stop using them?
Well, if news organizations haven't learned the lesson from 2000, then they never will. Exit polls are interesting. They're good to look at, but it's been, you know, you got to wait for the actual results to come in before you can make any solid predictions. I was a little surprised when I saw such a Romney lead in the first place from their initial exit polling. And so I was a little less surprised when they came out to be inaccurate.
Hmm. You were surprised because you thought who would be in the lead?
I thought it would be either Gingrich or Santorum or very, very close, which is what it turned out to be. When they have an exit poll showing Romney up 35 to 29 or 28 for the other guys, I'm not exactly sure what it was. That was a little surprising. And that could have something to do with people responding to exit polls in person.
Right. So why wasn't it Gingrich?
I don't have a perfect answer for that. You know, both of these men are social conservatives. They're fiscal conservatives. They resonate well with the Mississippi populace. The closest you could get is saying that Santorum had a better ground game. He was here more, and the crowds that came to see him were more excited.
And why would that be? What excites the crowds about Rick Santorum?
Beating Barack Obama.
Really? They think that he has a better chance?
That is, when you talk to Republicans and conservatives here, the number one thing everyone talks about is they want to beat Barack Obama. They desperately want to beat Barack Obama. And the guy that is getting the most buzz that can beat Barack Obama on the staunch conservative side is Rick Santorum.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of Newt Gingrich events here, and he just didn't seem as engaged and as excitable and as excited as Rick Santorum did.
And what are the issues that make people in Mississippi believe that he is the candidate to beat the president?
Well, there's a real sense that Rick Santorum is the appropriate guy as far as getting at conservative values, and that goes to a number of issues as far as the economy and just being able to really articulate what conservatives view and feel when it comes to issue more so than specific policies.
Mm-hmm. Our last guest was talking about a huge event where only Santorum and Gingrich showed up that had 2,000 people in Birmingham this week. Were there similar events in Mississippi, gatherings where candidates, but only a few of them showed up and there were massive crowds?
We didn't really have big gathering events that you would. In 2008, when the Democratic campaign was still going and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama came to the Mississippi primary, it was a big deal. Here in Mississippi, we've had a number of events with all of the candidates except for Ron Paul, and the crowds are numbering a few hundred. So the heat around this campaign, and I think this is borne out in the numbers of people who came out to vote, is much less than it was 4 years ago.
Mm. And so the numbers were down in Mississippi yesterday?
Yeah, they were down to about, and I'm ballparking, like 330,000, 300,000 compared to 450,000 4 years ago.
Mm. So what's the difference?
excitement. It's just, you know, Mississippi is going to vote for the Republican candidate. It's unusual for the state to be in a role of selecting the Republican candidate. It's been since 1976 that we've had a role in that. And it's just not as much excitement as it was in 2008 when Democrats had the chance to select between two people that really excited them, as opposed to deciding this election.
Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey, what do you make of the fact, or are we making too much of the fact, that Romney lost this and it indicates that he has a significant problem in the Deep South? Is that just something that he can brush off and go ahead into the West and the Midwest and do much better? Or does it indicate significant problems in his whole strategy of trying to secure the nomination?
Well, there's, I think there's two questions going on there, and one is the perception angle of it, and one is the delicate count angle of it. On the delicate count side, he's all right, because Mississippi's proportionally awarded its delegates, and so to get what he got, which is outperforming his expectations even a week ago, it could be viewed as a win from the Romney camp. From the perception side, you could look at it from both ways, is that he has a Deep South problem, as you say, but on the other hand, he got 30%. And people were writing him off in this state, and early polling had him very, very low. And so to come up to 30% and to get a third of the electorate is impressive in its own right.
Mm-hmm. And what about Newt Gingrich? Let me ask you, as I asked our other guest, he likes to explain his positions. I mean, it seems as though he relishes these, even when he loses a state, he relishes the opportunity to talk about how he is guiding the national conversation and what a great debater he is. What do you imagine the pressure is on him today to get out of the race, and what would be the impact if he did decide to get out of the race?
Well, let me just tell you what Mississippi voters are saying, and they don't want him to get out. I was at a watch party last night, and I asked everybody this question, which is, if he loses tonight after he had staked so much on Mississippi and Alabama, what does that mean? And they say, stay in. Go to the convention. Go to Tampa. Take your message to Tampa. You can articulate conservative values, and you can debate Obama well, that the delegate count, the race, none of that matters, and that they really believe that he should stay in this race and continue that message. As far as the impact it has on the race, I mean, that's fairly obvious. It then becomes a Rick Santorum, Mitt Romney, moderate versus conservative alternative head-to-head choice.
Mm-hmm. In Alabama, people of faith voted in large numbers for Rick Santorum. Was that true in Mississippi as well?
Well, if you go by the exit polls, then yes, especially for people who are very conservative. They voted not overwhelmingly for Rick Santorum, but slightly more towards Rick Santorum and split with Newt Gingrich. But if you're comparing it to Mitt Romney, then yeah, it was a pretty significant difference.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. Our guest this part of the program joining us by phone from Mississippi. He is a reporter for Mississippi Public Broadcasting, Capital reporter for Mississippi. Our number is 800-486-8655. Terry in Rice Lake. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I was listening to, I don't know, Morning Joe, I think it was this morning, and somebody was talking about, you know, the primary. They were talking about the electorate down there in Alabama and Mississippi. And I thought I heard them say that there's 22% of the population. I don't know if they were talking about Mississippi or Alabama combined that are on food stamps. I thought I heard 22%. Can you confirm that or deny that, or that's that figure's accurate or not?
Well, it actually, the figure for food stamps in Mississippi, that's about right. It's 1 in 5, 1 in 6 when you look at that. But the larger, I guess the question that you're getting at is the reliance of Mississippi population on federal subsidies, and it's quite substantial.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yet they, what that guy said, he said they don't vote their interests, their economic interests. The Southerns, them two Southern states especially.
Jeffrey? Well, I can't really, I'm not going to speak to voter motive, but I will speak to when I met Newt Gingrich, I asked him that question, which was, how do you balance the fact that Mississippi is the poorest state in the nation and a heavy recipient of federal subsidies with your desire to cut the budget? How do those two meet? And he didn't talk about necessarily cutting those programs, more simplifying the bureaucracy to access those programs to make them cheaper and then block granting them back to the states to make them more efficient in his view. So when politicians come here, they're definitely aware of the fact that Mississippians rely on the federal government for day-to-day needs.
Mm-hmm. And what about the way the campaign was run in Mississippi? Was it a negative campaign as it was in Florida? Was there not much television or radio presence?
There, it went from nothing to everything overnight. When this all got started, nobody thought it would come here as far as the presidential campaign, because it's always been wrapped up on the Republican side at this point. But the number I saw, at least from Mitt Romney, was that he spent $2 million in Mississippi and Alabama in the week between Super Tuesday and the Tuesday we came here. So you couldn't watch the evening news without 4 out of 5 commercials being for one of the candidates or the other, or by their super PAC.
Mm-hmm. And they were, on the whole, pretty positive messages or not?
Oh, no.
No.
No, not at all. No.
It was a nasty campaign.
Well, you know, every state likes to think that they're the nastiest. I think these are pretty on par with what it was for the rest of the national campaigns, what you would see on your CBS Evening News. So it was, you know, it was, they were negative, but they weren't in particular negative in the way that you would think if someone were really going for the throat that they could.
Let's go to Gene in Oshkosh. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Kathleen and your guest. I am confused. I can distinctly remember John F. Kennedy going to the South and promising Methodist and Baptist ministers that he will not take orders from the Vatican. And here we are with a large percentage of the Roman Catholics in the country ignoring actions on the part of the clergy and the bishops, big fight. I don't understand what has happened. We could say, hey, the angels came, and therefore, I'd be interested in your guest addressing the Catholic issue in the South, and as it was when Kennedy had to promise, you know, that he would be president of the United States and not a lackey for the Vatican.
Hmm. Interesting question. Jeffrey.
Well, I suppose it's important to remember that Mississippi is largely Baptist and not Catholic. A recent poll found that 74% of Mississippians consider themselves evangelical, and I don't think you would find many Catholics self-identifying in that category. And it's become a non-issue for Mississippi Christians. They view Catholics as part of the larger Christian faith. And you'll have to forgive my youth. I wasn't around for that particular campaign when Kennedy made that speech. So all I can speak to is now, and that there is not a division between Mississippi Protestant evangelicals and Mississippi Catholics.
Mm. So they just consider Santorum an evangelical. They don't worry about taking any kind of policy decisions from the Vatican on birth control or issues like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's interesting. That is a change, certainly, from JFK. Thank you, Gene, for the call. David in San Francisco. Hi.
Hey, how are you? Kathleen and Jeffrey. You know, I wanted to ask how the candidates faced the BP oil spill. You know, typically a candidate will come through a region and they'll make local promises. For example, in Alabama, you've got Huntsville, which is way up the state, but it's got NASA, it's got their Silicon Valley, and it's got its universities. So candidates might go up there and promise things to the educated people of Alabama, but when they get down into, actually, your guest Jeffrey, are you from Mississippi? Are you?
Yeah,
I'm.
Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah.
So I'll tailor it more toward Mississippi. I'm just wondering how the candidates, when they were along the coastline, made promises toward getting compensation for BP, or did they? Are they essentially apologists for BP, or are they? Did they promise anything for the people who were hard hit by the BP Gulf oil spill?
At any event that I was at, that was not brought up as an issue.
Hmm. What about resuming drilling on the Gulf? That certainly has been brought up today, even.
Yeah, that's widely popular here, at least among people who would attend a Romney, Gingrich, or Santorum event. They want more drilling. There's efforts by our state government to expand drilling into state waters. The most you'll get, at least in reference to the BP oil spill, is promises that future drilling will be more safe than it was 2 years ago.
Well, that said, is there a countervailing lobby of fishermen or boat owners or people who have expensive real estate on the shoreline who can lobby against the oil companies, or are they completely washed over by the oil lobby?
No, there is a countervailing lobby. It's like you say, the fishermen are there, and there's a coalition called the 12 Mile South Coalition, which is a reference to they want a line 12 miles out where you can't drill inside that line. There's interest from the Tourism Association here in the state that that oil rigs within sight of the coast would be a negative draw to tourism.
Yeah, but essentially, see, here in California, we haven't had offshore drilling in decades because the real estate value of California, especially coastline properties, is so high. If you damaged some movie star's front beach, then you're gonna hear about it for the next number of decades. And so the idea that that Mississippi may have low dollar real estate values at the coastline, is that one of the reasons why the lobbying power is ineffective? Yeah.
Well,
all right. So just no promises either way, other than more drilling, huh?
I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but we don't have movie stars on the coast of Mississippi, but we do have 10% unemployment.
You don't have any movie stars, huh? Maybe you need to start a campaign to get them to move there. It is interesting. I'm sorry.
Only if you count Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, he's a movie star.
Sure.
Got the best voice in the country. Thank you, David, very much for the call. It is interesting, though, that this issue was pretty much off the table considering the enormity of the event and the ramifications that I'm sure continue. Did you find that unusual?
I don't find it all that unusual. There's a lot of desire here for economic activity. We have our overall state unemployment rate is 10%, but you have counties in Mississippi that are 18, 20, 22% unemployment. So the desire to go to work and desire to create economic energy in the state is enough to put what happened 2 years ago, the BP explosion and subsequent spill, on the back burner, especially since it was so localized to the coast.
Mm-hmm. 10%, that's pretty high.
It's third highest in the nation.
Is it really?
And unless it changed, I mean, new numbers come out this week, so it could alter, but last month it was the third highest.
So how else did the candidates address that issue, which must be front and center for a lot of people in Mississippi?
Well, I mean, the biggest issue, and this will probably not come as a surprise, is that they believe that government, particularly the federal government, is stifling any potential growth, that overregulation and any type of government involvement in the economy is what's holding things back from taking off. So there's a perception that if you had less government and you had less regulation, that we would be in better shape than we are now.
Mm-hmm. I keep asking people what they mean by that. How do the candidates fill that out, overregulation, in terms of what's the overregulation?
Well, the headlines are, of course, Obama's health care reform law from 2010. The Wall Street reform bill that was also passed, I believe, in that same year. The Keystone Pipeline is one that was brought up a number of times. So they can draw out specific issues to illustrate the point. But then there's also just the larger emotional impact that resonates with a lot of people here, which is just that there is just too much of government.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any unanswered questions that you have that you're tracking down after this primary?
I mean, the biggest unanswered question for us is if Mitt Romney is the eventual nominee, what it means for Mississippi conservatives who obviously demonstrated their unease with voting for him as the national frontrunner. If he becomes the nominee in August and in Tampa or before then, what it's going to mean for them and their enthusiasm and their willingness to go vote. But it all circles back to the fact that Mississippi is going to vote for the Republican candidate, whoever it's going to be. That's not in question at this point.
Mm-hmm. It's just a question of whether or not people will go to the polls.
Yeah. I think that's the bottom line question. And it's not a national popular vote, so the Republican nominee doesn't have to worry about enthusiasm in Mississippi. He will get his six votes, his six delegates in the Electoral College for Mississippi, and we'll move on.
All right. Thank you very, very much, Jeffrey, for being with us. I'm sure you could use a little nap today, if that's possible, because it's been a long haul, I imagine.
I've got a tall coffee. Thank you.
That'll do it for you, huh? Tall coffee.
Oh, yeah, I do my best.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Hess, a reporter from Mississippi Public Broadcasting. He is Capital Reporter, and we thank him so much for joining us to look at the results of the Mississippi primary. And thanks also to Stan Ingold, reporter for Alabama Public Radio, to talk about Alabama and Mississippi. We are going to continue our Wednesday conversation. We'll be looking at voting rights, the next part of our program. Voter ID, actually. As you know, two judges in Wisconsin have ruled that the voting rights bill in Wisconsin, unconstitutional. Texas has a problem with their voting rights as well. So there's a national examination of some of the states that have put into effect pretty stringent voter ID bills. Lachlan McDonald is going to join us momentarily, director of the Atlanta-based Voting Rights Project of the ACLU. He has been doing that since 1972, and he will be the keynote speaker in Milwaukee at the ACLU banquet coming up this Saturday. So we're going to talk about those decisions and what's happening nationally as we continue our show for this Wednesday. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, we're going to celebrate St. Patrick's Day just a little bit early. Frank Delaney was a wonderful, wonderful guest. He's become our traditional St. Patrick's Day guest. He's a broadcaster and has written a number of novels about Ireland. He's done a number of documentaries as well, and he's doing these five-minute podcasts on Ulysses. Each week, it's a project that's going to go on for 25 years. Whoa! All right, this part of the program, Lachlan McDonald, as I said, director of the Atlanta-based Voting Rights Project of the American Civil Liberties Union. He's represented racial and language minorities in many discrimination cases, specialized in the area of voting rights. He's argued cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, testified frequently before Congress, and written for scholarly and popular publications. His most recent books are A Voting Rights Odyssey, Black Enfranchisement in Georgia, and American Indians and the Fight for Equal Voting Rights. He's a South Carolina native, and he will be in Wisconsin on Saturday of this week at the ACLU banquet. Lachlan, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
First, please, your comments on the two decisions by Wisconsin judges concerning the voter ID bill here in the state that ruled unconstitutional.
Well, I applaud the decisions. I think they both were correct. They were based on state law, and they concluded that the photo ID requirement imposed a requirement for voting which violated the state constitution, which said you could vote if you were a resident, 18 years of age, and were a citizen. And it didn't say that you had to have any kind of photo ID, so there was an inconsistency with the state constitution. And in one of the cases, the one brought by the League of Women Voters, the court entered a permanent injunction. So hopefully that will be the end of it, although that certainly will be an appeal of that, and the Court of Appeals will eventually resolve the issue.
Mm-hmm. When you look, I know you keep careful track of what's going on with voter ID all over the country. Where do you place Wisconsin's voter ID bill? Is it a particularly stringent one, or does it fall in line with some of the other states that have recently passed these bills?
Well, there are eight states that passed photo ID requirements last year, and arguably some are more stringent than others. Maybe the Texas one is the most stringent, but the one in Wisconsin is stringent. We identified a number of people who simply will be unable to comply with the statute and will be denied the right to vote. So I think that the state courts were correct in invalidating it and permanently enjoining its use. But, you know, I mean, we've seen we all like to think that America was founded on, you know, concepts of democracy, and in some sense it was, but also when the nation was founded, the only people who could vote were white male property owners over the age of 21, so we really were founded on the concept of an aristocracy of voters, and there's so many groups that had historically been denied the right to vote and participate. Blacks didn't get the right to vote until after the Civil War. Women didn't get the constitutional right to vote until passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920. American Indians didn't get the right to vote until passage of the Indian Citizenship Act of 1924. So, you know, we're a democracy, but we're a democracy which has systematically restricted the right to vote to certain groups, and they're white male property owners. And unfortunately, these photo ID requirements are a resurrection of those kind of areas.
The judge in the latest ruling in Wisconsin said that voter fraud is no more poisonous to our democracy than voter suppression. Your comment on that?
Well, I agree. You know, the only justification for these photo ID requirements has been that it's necessary to combat voter fraud, but there's virtually no evidence of fraudulent in-person voting. Georgia adopted a photo ID requirement a couple of years ago, and unfortunately it was pre-cleared by the Department of Justice, which has recently objected to photo ID requirements from Texas and South Carolina. But when the act was passed by the General Assembly, then Secretary of State Kathy Cox wrote a letter to Governor Perdue and urged him to object, to veto the bill, and said that there was no evidence whatever during the entire time she had been Secretary of State of in-person voter fraud. And secondly, that there was no doubt that the photo ID requirement would have a disparate impact on groups that traditionally have been discriminated against in voting: racial minorities, the elderly, the poor people. So there's no evidence of in-person voter fraud. So you must ask yourself, what is going on with passage of these bills? And I think that what is going on are efforts to suppress the votes of certain groups.
It is interesting, and I guess it must say something, that all of the states that have enacted these laws tend to be of one political party. One political party has taken control. So the Republicans seem to believe that there's a lot of voter fraud, and the Democrats seem to believe that this could result in a lot of voter suppression, that this is the issue. Isn't that interesting that on such a basic issue in an American democracy or in any democracy, you have this huge divergence of viewpoints?
Yeah. Well, it is, and it's one of the ironies. The South was controlled by Democrats, during the days of slavery and the post-Reconstruction period when all of these discriminatory voting practices were adopted: poll taxes, literacy tests, understanding tests, felon disfranchising schemes, onerous durational residency requirements. This is a whole laundry list of things, but you're correct that it's Republican-dominated states that are now enacting these voter suppression measures. And it's interesting that we saw the real upswing in all of this following the 2008 election, in which Barack Obama, a Democrat, was elected. So I think that one has to be fairly innocent and naive not to understand that what we see going on now with these voter suppression measures is, in a very important way, driven by partisan considerations.
And tell me, I know the ACLU has a suit against voters, Wisconsin's voter ID as well. What is the status of that? How is that proceeding?
Well, it's proceeding, and we filed an amended complaint, and we're in sort of the final discovery stages in filing a motion for a preliminary injunction. But as long as the state court permanent injunction is in effect, there won't be anything for the federal court to do. So I think that, of course, I don't know what the federal court ultimately will do, but I can't imagine that the federal court would proceed to litigate the issue when there's been a permanent injunction in the state court against the photo ID requirement. But we are proceeding with getting prepared to have a hearing in the federal district court.
We have time for one phone call. John in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. Go ahead, please.
Well, here's, I'm going to make some comments first.
You'll have to make one. We're almost out of time.
Okay. We know that we've got a recall problem with voting fraud. Transportation problems. Why can they go to the vote, but they can't go to the motor vehicle department? And the other one is, if they go into vote and they don't have a photo ID, then I think their photograph should be taken with the documentation that they do have with them.
We have about 30 seconds, Lachlan.
Well, here's what I think is the solution. That we ought to have a law, a federal law, that says no matter what the requirements are for in-person voting in the various states, that if you sign a declaration saying you are who you represent yourself as being, that you are a citizen, that you're 18 years of age or older, and that you are a registered voter, you should be able to vote. That would solve all of these problems.
Thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you in Milwaukee on Saturday. Lachlan McDonald, director of the Atlanta-based Voting Rights Project of the American Civil Liberties Union, where he has been since 1972, responding to the decisions in the state of Wisconsin and other cases in other states in the country. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rhonda for on-air production.